Hey, this is Jamie with Stonemaier Games, and today I'm going to talk about my top 10 favorite games that are focused, at least somewhat and probably heavily, on contracts and mission fulfillment. So these are the types of games where a lot of the points that you're getting, or even the point of the game, is to fill a contract or a mission. And for the most part, I'm going to have a few small exceptions to this, but for the most part, I'm referring to player-specific goals and player-specific contracts or missions. Like if I can get a contract just for myself that says, Jamie, you get 10 points if you turn in 10 turnips and 4 wheat and 2 coins, you'll get 10 points from that. That's kind of a standard contract that I'm talking about. There are a few exceptions to that that I'll mention below, but that's the general idea here. Two games, or one game that didn't quite make the list, I haven't played in a long time, is Zaya, Legends of Adrift System, and Firefly. Firefly was mentioned by a lot of people that I mentioned this topic to, but I have not played Firefly, the game. I think there are a couple different Firefly games. This is the one with a bunch of contracts and missions. Also, several Stonemaier games feature the concept of contracts and missions, including Viticulture, probably most notably. It has wine orders that you're fulfilling for many of the points that you get in the game. Scythe has private objectives, and Charterstone has some kind of mission-like things that you unlock throughout the game. Yeah, let's jump right in. Let's go for number 10. Number 10, I have Dead of Winter. So Dead of Winter is one of the kind of exceptions for this list because it's a little different than the typical normal concept of contracts that I'll be mentioning for most of the games on this list, most of the Euro games. But I love the contracts in Dead of Winter, and it actually has two types of contracts slash missions, one of which falls essentially into the category of personal objectives. So for example, here is a secret objective that says, you win the game if all the following are true. The main objective has been completed, and you have at least 3 food cards in your hand. Here's another one that says Historian. You win the game if the main objective has been completed, and you have at least 2 book cards in your hand. And there's also some that are betrayal cards that have you kind of fighting against the main mission. This one says morale is at 0. You only control 1 survivor, so there are things that go against the normally cooperative nature of Dead of Winter. Although that's the thing I love about Dead of Winter. Oh, and also to complement these are the main missions. So the main missions would be like find a cure. This is a mission that involves finding a cure, and you're all doing that collectively as a team throughout the game. But the thing that I love about the missions and the contracts in Dead of Winter is the idea that everyone kind of feels like a traitor, because everyone, while you're working together, most likely to complete the main mission, you each also have your own private objectives that you're trying to fulfill, and sometimes they contradict the main mission. And the way that you feel, oftentimes that you're filling the main mission, is that you are contributing cards. Like I mentioned, the food card. There might be a mission that says, okay, everyone needs to contribute 5 food cards. So everyone's throwing cards into a pile face down. You don't know who put which card in that pile. And at certain times in the game, you reveal the cards in that pile, and you're hoping to have that 5 food that you need as a group, but you may not, because someone may have kept that food for themselves because they need that to also fill their private objective. Reminds me a lot of Battlestar Galactica. It has a similar group mission system where as a group you are trying to meet these contracts or these missions. And I've kept most games off this list that apply to that, these idea of a group, because I'm mostly applying the idea of contracts to individual players going after contracts. But I wanted to mention this because I think it's fairly notable. It's a cool way of incorporating contracts or missions into a game, notably a cooperative game. So that's Dead of Winter. My number 9 favorite game with contracts or missions is Clans of Caledonia. This might be higher on the list at certain times while I've played Clans, but I haven't played it in a while. Clans is a Terra Mystica-like game where a core aspect of the game is that you are obtaining and completing contracts that are on this public board. They're little tiles that show, like, it's basically resource conversion, but you're converting a few resources, some resources, into often better resources and points and money and things that you need. I'll discuss some other games that do this later on the list, but I love the idea of contracts that aren't just getting you points, where they get you not just points, but also things that move you forward towards your next step in the game. And this is one of the things I love about contracts, the idea that they can help show you what comes next in the game, what you need to do next in the game. They give you a direction if you want it. You can follow that direction. So if you fill a contract and you're like, I'm not sure what to do next, if the contract gave you a certain type of resource, that resource specifically might lead you into the next step of the game, maybe the next mission or contract or objective to pursue next. I really like that it's guiding you a little bit if you want to be guided in that way. I love that about contracts and missions. So that's Clans of Caledonia, my number 9 favorite game in this category. My number 8 favorite game that has contracts is Parks. Parks is a delightful game. I've enjoyed it most at 2 players, but it does play up to 5 players. And a big part of Parks, even though there are a variety of ways to get points in Parks, are to fill these missions, these contracts that are basically just asking for certain types of resources. So this one wants 2 mountains, wants you to visit 2 mountains, 2 sunshine, three sunshine, 1 water. This one says you get 2 points if you have 1 forest, 1 sunshine, 1 water, and so they're worth varying amounts of points. So that one was 2 points, 4 points here if you can get 4 of the forests. 2 things I like about these in particular. One, I like that some of the resources are more difficult to get, and that's easy to see from the action spaces on the board. And so you know if you're getting more difficult resources, you're going to get more points for those resources. Also, your private objective may steer you in a certain direction. It might say that for every park that you have that needed some forests, if you get say four parks that have those forests on them, you get extra points at the end of the game. So not only do you have private objectives that are steering you towards these contracts, but you also have these contracts that are very simple to fulfill. It's just points, it's resources, but it's satisfying whenever you complete one, and it gives you a direction to go in the game. That's Parks, my number 8 favorite game with contracts. My number 7 favorite game with contracts or missions is Stone Age. In Stone Age, this isn't the entire point of the game, but it is one of the core ways of getting points. And the contracts are in the form of buildings on the board. So there are these 4 different stacks of buildings. I think there are 7 tiles per stack that might vary by player count. That also serves as one of the triggers for the end game. So if one of those stacks runs out, the end game is triggered. But in any given round, you could place a worker on one of those buildings to reserve it for yourself, and then make sure that you're gathering enough resources during that round or previously to build that building. One neat thing that I think the Stone Age does here is that how it connects these contracts to the end of the game. And it does so in such a way that since you're placing the worker on the contract and you only pull off workers in Stone Age at the end of each round, that it has a timer built into the game. It's not like someone could race through a stack or go through multiple tiles in a stack in the same round. You can only take care of that top contract of each stack in each round. So if I have that number right, 7 tiles per stack, then the game at least is going to last 7 rounds. You know that going into the game, but it could be a little longer if no one focuses on one of those particular stacks. Also, I like how the points in Stone Age are very clearly defined by how hard it is to get the resources. Each resource is worth a very specific amount based on how hard it is to get it. And to determine the points for those contracts, you just add up the values of each of those resources. So I think gold is 6. You need to roll 6s or add up and divide by 6 to get gold. So every gold is worth 6 points that you spend to use to complete one of those buildings. And then I think brick might be next. I can't remember the rest of them, but it's very clear how the points convert into, or the resources convert into the point value for each of those buildings. That's Stone Age, my number 7 game with contracts or resources. My number 6 favorite game with contracts or resources is the big game, Clank Legacy. I mentioned this in a lot of my videos. And this is a very unique game in that it has some contracts here. These are some contracts that we didn't complete in our game. I don't want to mention a lot of them, but I'll throw out one of them here. If you don't want to, don't look at the screen for a second if you don't want a spoiler from Clank Legacy, but it's not a big spoiler. Basically, you have these missions that come out in Clank Legacy that any player can fulfill. This one is a vampire hunter mission. And it says a player who ends their space on the ruin space with the $1 sticker may spend 4 fight to read passage 184. And so a couple different interesting, a couple things are happening here. One is you don't know the outcome of this. And so Clank Legacy gives you a reason to pay attention to the story to see if this is even a good thing for you. In general, it is a good thing to complete missions, but every now and then something might happen that isn't great for you as you complete a mission. The other thing is, if you don't complete all the missions each game, there are certain missions that you need to complete. That wasn't one of them, but there are certain missions that just say, okay, here's one. If the game ends first before completing this mission, read passage 50. I won't show you what the mission is in case it really matters, but you are incentivized, even though this is a competitive game, you're incentivized as a group to figure out who's going to take care of that mission because something bad happens to everybody if no one completes that contract or that mission. And so I really like that in a competitive game, how you are essentially incentivized to divide and conquer a little bit with the missions to make sure they're all taken care of. I also like, and I'll mention this later for another game, but I like that many of the contracts are related to a certain space on the board or a certain place. This one refers to a certain waypoint. This is a ruined space, a castle that you need to go to. So I like that idea. It feels more thematic that way, that you're not just vaguely turning in a certain number of resources, but you're going to a certain place to discover it, to spend resources, or even just to go there. And I think that's great. I love that about Clank Legacy, my number six favorite game with contracts or missions. My number five favorite game in this category is one that I've really enjoyed recently on Board Game Arena. I've revisited after playing the tabletop game a number of times, but that is The Voyages of Marco Polo. Again, there are a lot of different ways to get points in Marco Polo. This might have even been higher on the list if it weren't for there being a huge other way to get points in the game. But one of the main ways is to get points from the contracts that are at the bottom of the board. And again, similar to Clans of Caledonia, these contracts don't always lead just into points, but they also lead into more resources and things that point you in the next direction. There's this feeling of progression as you complete contracts. Sometimes in games, you complete a contract and you just get points, and then you're back down to nothing because you don't have any resources. You have to build back up. So there's an ebb and flow there, but it is really nice in a game like Voyages of Marco Polo, where you get a certain number of resources based on the contracts that you've acquired, and then you get more resources after you accomplish it, and that they steer you into the next step. So you're constantly getting a little bit better instead of going up and down like that. Also, I like in Voyages of Marco Polo, or I don't know if I necessarily like it, but I understand the point of it. You can only hold two contracts at a time. And I think that's important in this game because in every round, there are only a certain number of contracts available for any players to take. And so if a player could hold a dozen contracts, they might just save up for a bunch of con they might just accumulate contracts, unfulfilled contracts, and at a certain point in the game, fill a bunch of them one after another. But the game only limits you to two. You can only hold two unfulfilled contracts at a time. Also, one other thing that I like in Voyages of Marco Polo that I think is clever is you are rewarded at the end of the game if you are the player with the most filled contracts. So not only are you getting good stuff as you complete the contracts, but it also gives you a reason to have a little bit of player interaction, to pay attention to what the other players are doing and to see who is fulfilling contracts at the same rate as you, so you can make sure that you end up with more of them at the end of the game. So that is The Voyages of Marco Polo, my number five favorite game with contracts or missions. My number four favorite game with contracts and missions is Ticket to Ride. And this falls into an interesting category of secret contracts, secret missions. In a lot of these games, the contracts are face up on the table. You know what everyone's going after. Ticket to Ride, that's not the case. You have to kind of infer what other players are doing. And oftentimes, you're so focused on your own contracts that you're really not paying that much attention to other players. So that's an interesting decision. I don't know if that's always right for every game. I think it is right for Ticket to Ride, but it isn't always right. For some games, it's better to have it secret, some games private. In Viticulture, for example, it doesn't really matter all that much that it's secret or private. But in Ticket to Ride, because there's so much interaction on the board, I think it is important for those contracts to remain private. The other thing that I really like about the contracts, the missions, I forget exactly what they're called in Ticket to Ride, is that some of them overlap. So I might have, and they can determine exactly how you map the route. So in Ticket to Ride, the contracts say like, okay, you need to complete a route from New York to San Francisco. So you have that. But then you might have another contract, or you choose between multiple contracts, and another one might say you need to go between San Francisco and Houston, whatever the city is in Texas that they use in the game. And so that feels kind of good, where you know that you're pivoting, that you need to get to San Francisco for two different contracts. Sometimes you can even share routes. So that's not a good example because you're going south and north in America. And I'm talking about the American version of Ticket to Ride. But there might be some contracts where you're sharing routes along the way and completing multiple contracts at the same time. That feels really good too. The other thing that Ticket to Ride does, that is probably my least favorite thing about the contracts in Ticket to Ride, but I think it works, is that at the end of the game, if you haven't completed a contract, you lose points. It's either 10 or 20 points. It's a fairly large amount. Or maybe, no, you lose the number of points on the card itself. I think that's what it is. And so many games don't have this, but there are a few games where if you don't complete a contract that you spent turns getting, so you need to actually spend a turn even just to get that contract, you can lose points if you don't complete it. The reason Ticket to Ride does this is they don't want players to just get a bunch of contracts and kind of luck into a number of them. They want to incentivize you to think strategically and not just get a bunch of contracts, which I like. I think that makes sense. However, it doesn't feel great when you don't complete one of those contracts because normally, if you haven't completed a contract in Ticket to Ride, that means you also haven't completed certain routes that you needed to complete or that you would have gotten points from. So, I don't know. I don't know if you've ever played a variant of Ticket to Ride where you just don't lose points from it. It probably would imbalance the game. It's a very well-designed game, but it's something that I typically don't gravitate towards in games where if you don't complete a contract, that you lose points for doing so. I'd rather just get rewarded if you do complete it. Yes, but anyway, I really do enjoy the aspects of contracts and Ticket to Ride. That's why it's my number four. My number three is the most abstract game on the list, and it is Splendor. Splendor is a game where the whole game is filling contracts, and there are two types of contracts in the game. One are the core tiles that you're obtaining, and as you complete those contracts, they become engine-building aspects for you. So instead of, this is actually fairly unique of many of the contracts that I mentioned here, instead of just getting a one-time boost of points or resources if you complete a contract, in Splendor, you get an ongoing resource. So if I complete a certain contract, it might give me an emerald for the rest of the game that I can spend every turn if I want. That feels really good. There's an engine building aspect built into the contracts in Splendor. There are also the types of contracts in Splendor that are public. They're public objectives basically, and they're the first player to achieve them. So it's a race to achieve these much more difficult contracts. Or those objectives. Also, that reminds me in Splendor, there are three different rows in the game, and each row shows the difficulty level of completing the contracts in that row, and they're worth different amounts of points as well. So it feels really good to early in the game to be able to see that there are some very difficult contracts to obtain higher up on the list, and you can kind of target them and go after them. Also, I like in Splendor that you can reserve contracts. You can complete them. I believe you can complete them from the board itself, but you can also reserve them and keep them so that no one else can take it away from you. So there's a nice tension there. Do you use your turn to pull something into your hand to reserve it, or do you use it just to outright fulfill a card that's out there and not have to spend that turn to pull it into your hand? Really nice tension there, really nice decision points. So that's Splendor, my number three. My number two, I would say, are even a step above the rest, although I do really enjoy that engine building aspect of Splendor. Number two is Lords of Waterdeep. I really, really like the missions in Lords of Waterdeep for several different reasons. One, it does this thing I've been talking about where many of the missions give you points, but they also push you in the next direction. They give you a big boost as to where you go in the next step. They're like you might get 5 points, but you also get five wizards to use for whatever you want. And there's a lot of variance in the contracts there. There's a lot of different things you can get. There's also engine building contracts where you might get a few points, but you also get something that benefits you for the rest of the game. I might say for the rest of the game, whenever you fulfill a contract, you get 5 points. For the rest of the game, whenever you gain a warrior, a fighter, you get a point. So I love the engine building aspects of that too. I also like that the missions are divided into different thematic categories. Like I think there are I think 4 different colors of missions in the game, and they tie to your private objectives. So oftentimes you have a private objective that might say you want piety quests, or they're called quests in Lords of Waterdeep. You want You get points if you have, for every piety quest that you complete and every magic quest you complete. I forget the exact name for it, the purple ones. So it gives you a direction to go in the game. From the very beginning of the game, you know, okay, piety and the purple quests are worth more to me. I'm going to go after them. I'm going to try to get more of them. But there's also another player that may have a piety fighting quest objective in private that they're going after. So I love all the things. I really, really like how whenever I complete a mission, a quest in Lords of Waterdeep, it leads me to the next step in the game. It leads me forward. It gives me a sense of forward progression instead of just giving me points. And it has the engine building aspect, and it has those different categories of quests. Awesome, in my opinion, implementation of a quest system in Lords of Waterdeep. That brings me to my number one, which is a game that is often compared to Lords of Waterdeep, but is maybe a little bit heavier. Yeah, a little bit heavier. And that is Yado. I love me some Yado. This is the original edition. There's a new fancier edition that's out now, but I love the missions in Yado. They do many of the things that I've already talked about here. They like in Splendor, they divide it into four different categories. The black missions are the hardest. And they have you convert resources into points and get other things. They have bonuses. So here's a mission here. Kidnap Takumi Daimyo Yamamoto's son. So it has things that you're so up here in the gray are things that you need to complete the mission. Some things you have to turn in, some things you just have to have. But also if you have these things down here, so if you also turn in a point and 10 cards and a mission, you have to give up all those things, then you can get the bonus when you complete the mission. So you always have to have this stuff. But oh no, I did that wrong. I'm sorry. So you complete the top stuff and you get this. But if you also turn in these things, sorry, this bottom row, this bonus row, then you get these bonus things. So it's like you can level up every mission. So you're kind of trying to decide, okay, do I want to just turn in this stuff and get these things, or do I also want to turn in these things to get the bonus? And many of the core things you need in the game are gained from these missions. Like there isn't a great place on the board to get coins. You get coins from the missions. So you need to complete these missions throughout the game. I love the different levels of difficulty. So when you gain mission cards in the game, you can choose one of the four levels of difficulty. This is the hardest. So there's a lot of stuff on here, but there's also green missions that might say just turn in one little thing and get three coins, and that can move you forward in the game. But the other thing that I really, really love with these cards, in addition to the bonuses, which I think are brilliant, is that you have to go to certain locations. Kind of like Clank Legacy. You have to go to certain locations to complete many of these missions. Let me see if I have an example of that here. I don't know if actually these. Oh no, here they are. They're these symbols at the top here. So this is saying that you need to have a worker here and a worker here to complete this mission. And it often ties into the theme of the mission. Where it might say you need to go steal a boat from the docks. And so you need to have a worker, one of your workers, it's a worker placement game, you need to have one of your workers at the docks itself. So again, it takes this abstract concept and it focuses it on the theme and on the mechanisms of the game of actually having a worker in a certain place to complete the mission that makes thematic sense for that specific place. Like this one, this one says kidnap Kimiko, the Shogun's concubine. And so you actually need to have a worker at the palace to do that kidnapping in the game. There's even, I guess there's one other thing that I love about this. I mentioned it in a few videos, but there is one, okay, kill the Shogun. So this is a crazy mission, crazy difficult. Tons of stuff that you need to get. You need to basically work your entire game towards doing this. But if you do, you get 14 points, you get two bonus cards, and it says the game ends immediately after this round. So you can not you can have a huge impact on the game. You can actually end the game with this card if you're able to pull it off. But it's very difficult to do. I think I've seen it done once. I may have done it, may have been somebody else that did it. But Yado, I love the missions in this game. They are brilliant for so many different reasons, and that's why Yado is my number one game involving contracts and missions. I'd love to hear your thoughts in the comments below about what you think about contracts and missions in games, maybe a few of your favorite games that feature contracts and missions. And if you played Firefly, since so many people mentioned Firefly to me, if you played that game, let me know what you love about the missions or contracts in that game as well, what makes them so special. I'd love to hear about that in the comments below. All right, thanks.